Hey guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important, give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for cloud, data, or web help? There's no tech shortage in the room. The Room is a talent community offering highly skilled, ready-to-work talent when you need it. The Room's tech talent is trained to Silicon Valley standards, vetted through a rigorous data-driven process, and individually matched to fit your needs. Find top-tier tech talent fast, just like the kind of people who developed this cool streaming app you're on right now. Visit trytheroom.com/tech.
All righty, let's start off the 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time hour. 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific, discussing the Alabama trio, which you knew about the story of Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Hurts because that was more so one up against another. At one point, you had Jalen Hurts be the guy, then Tua takes over. Tua wins the national championship game at halftime up against Georgia. The next year, we all know by now not to continue to rehash this. And the SEC title game, Tua gets hurt, Jalen Hurts comes in. They go out there and win the SEC title game. So, after that, you had Tua continuously get hurt, unfortunately, at Alabama. And then Mac Jones ends up that year after Tua goes to the NFL, not only winning the job, and now Bryce Young, he was the backup there, and now is a tremendous football player and could be the number one overall pick in the draft. But Mac Jones, that year, wins a job, and I remember we had him on in the summer, and I didn't even know if he was going to be the starting quarterback yet, even though the thought was that he was going to be the starting quarterback. And Mac Jones was a Heisman finalist. Now, the Heisman Trophy ended up going to Devontae Smith, but Mac Jones had a wonderful season. So, these three guys with all Alabama connections, Tua stayed at Bama, Mac stayed at Bama, and then you had Jalen Hurts obviously go and transfer and then go find the way and be the quarterback at Oklahoma and be a Heisman finalist, they're always going to be linked together. And it's going to be fascinating to see 5 years from now where these quarterbacks are all going to be and how we're going to view them. And for Tua and also Jalen Hurts, this year was set up to be a year where you have to succeed. It's a sink or swim year. And you got to swim this year. And through the first two games of the season, the returns on Jalen Hurts have been magnificent. Give credit to Howie Roseman. Howie Roseman went out there. Howie Roseman said, I'm going to go get A.J. Brown. We have a great offensive line. I'll go fine-tune the defense here and there with some moves. But I'm going to go give us coming off a playoff year at Philadelphia at 9-8, every reason to not only repeat and get back to the postseason, but then take that next step. And so far through the first two games, Lions and Vikings, you've seen a drastic improvement in Jalen Hurts. And I really do believe that just having a little confidence instilled in you can go a long way and being in the right situation. Now, Jalen Hurts has always had the confidence. And I said this yesterday, I'll say it again. There's sometimes teams go, that's our guy, and they don't make moves that would tend you to believe that you actually genuinely believe that's your franchise quarterback. Howie gave every reason for Jalen Hurts to succeed this year. And you're seeing now with legit weapons, with a really good offensive line, Jalen Hurts not only kill you with his legs, but also kill you with his arm. I think the Eagles are in a good spot. I do think Jalen Hurts is going to get another contract in Philadelphia. Now for Tua, the part that has derailed his career so far would be a few things. Coaching staff not really believing in him. The old coaching staff. You then also had injuries occur as well. And to Tua's fault as well, some poor play. But you look at the Dolphins last year. Yeah, Jalen Waddle, good draft pick. Offensive line was bad. You had no run game. And you had a coach who I like in Brian Flores, but he's defensive minded coach. And every year Flores was the head coach of the Dolphins, they had a different offensive coordinator. So it was a sloppy approach offensively. Now this offseason, even though I still don't know what Mike McDaniel is as a head coach, you bring in a guy that is all plugged into the offensive side of the ball. You go and improve that offensive line. And not only that, you thought last year you got a playmaker in Jalen Waddle. This year then, you still have Jalen Waddle and you went out and acquired Tyreek Hill. For Tua Tagovailoa, this is the last chance for Tua. And week one, you went up against the Pats. Week two, you go on out there and it's not going well. It was not going well. And then that fourth quarter happened and then boom, in a snap of a finger, the story that would have been on Monday, wow, Dolphins not that good as we thought after week one. Tua, not the franchise quarterback. They either get put on the back burner or they evaporate until he goes through a stretch of some poor play. But to be able to step up and show out when you were in a moment of great adversity, and once again just shows when you're in a good spot and you're having an organization do things to support you, you're getting set up for success. And so far through the first 2 weeks of the season, even though I was skeptical about the Dolphins heading into the year, they're being a successful football team. They're showing you that maybe last year is different than this year. With that being said, though, we don't hand out Lombardi trophies. We don't hand out playoff appearances, even though we talk about them in September. And anything short of making the playoffs this year for the Dolphins is a disaster. So for the Eagles, with Jalen Hurts, my expectation this year is this. You're clearly going to win the division. And I think they could do some damage in the playoffs. That's where I'll keep it as that. But I got to see Jalen Hurts in a big moment. Because Jaw said this to me before this other season, Ron Jaworski. If you want him to be the franchise guy, he has to go have a franchise quarterback type moment in a big spot. Now, it's only September. You got to get into the postseason. They will this year. But he's got to go play great in a playoff game. And I think right now he's a very good quarterback. I do. For Tua, it's about just simply getting to the playoffs this year. If the Dolphins get to the playoffs, that's a win. Now for Mac, I think Mac is a good quarterback. Mac made the playoffs last year. But as we just talked about with Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa being put in the right spot, Mac Jones isn't being put in the right spot right now. Now they're 1-1. They play the Ravens and they play the Packers the next 2 weeks. That's a tough stretch. But I look at Mac Jones as he's someone that I don't know if he'll ever be a great quarterback. But I do think he could be a good quarterback. And you look at that approach offensively right now. Matt Patricia's your offensive coordinator? Yikes. Who are your speed wide receivers? Like, you're relying on Nelson Aguilar, Devontae Parker, Jacoby Myers, a nice wide receiver, but you don't have a number one. When I look at the Eagles, who's the number one? A.J. Brown. When I look at the Dolphins, Tyreek Hill, number one. Mac Jones doesn't have that number one. Now, what Mac Jones does have is an offensive line that's not great, but it's good. It's good enough, I think. And I like that run game in New England. I'm a fan of Damian Harris. I'm a fan of Ramondre Stevenson, but you don't have elite skill position players. You actually don't even have a great skill position player. Any of those wide receivers that I just mentioned, any other team, number two, number three wide receiver, probably more so number two for Jacoby Myers. So they need more offensively, and that's why it was befuddling to me all offseason long when all these big moves are being made. I'm not saying that they were going to go pay for Devontae Adams or they go pay for Tyreek Hill. And Tyreek Hill wanted to go to the Dolphins. Devontae Adams wanted to go to the Raiders, and that's just the way that it went down. But where were you, Bill Belichick, who's a tremendous coach, one of the greatest coaches of all time. Why didn't you go out and hire a traditional offensive coordinator with experience on, I don't know, the offensive side of the ball, and go get Mac Jones a legit number one weapon? Eagles traded for A.J. Brown. Dolphins traded for Tyreek. The Patriots traded for Devontae Parker. That's what they did. So when I look at these three Alabama quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts is set up for success, and he's succeeding right now. Tua Tagovailoa is set up for success, and they're saying, we're going to find out if Tua is going to sink or if he's going to swim. We're putting him in a spot where this is on him now. There's no more excuses. If the Patriots have the season that I think they're going to have, where they miss the playoffs, Mac Jones will show some moments, but he's not set up to succeed. And when he fails this year and they don't make the playoffs, people are going to say sophomore slump, people are going to say regression, or people just say the guy's not that good. When I watch the Patriots, I look at Mac Jones, I don't see a guy that stinks. I see a guy that happens to be, right now, a good quarterback, an above-average quarterback. But look what he's not working with. Like, or look, you know, what he actually has alongside of him. You know, this team was 10-7 last year and made the playoffs. They don't have a ton of great weapons. And I know everyone said, oh, they didn't ask Mac to do much. They didn't ask Mac to do much. Oh, Cam was there a few years ago. Pretty similar roster. And what did Cam have? 7 wins? So I think Mac has earned the respect of that locker room. I think Mac has shown he's got a shot to be good. And he's had some good football. But there's going to be some ugly moments this year at times for the Patriots where I think you're going to see a lot what you've seen the last 2 weeks where week one, oh, wow, that was ugly against the Dolphins. Then week two, all right, they get a win for the Steelers. But you just look at the speed of this Ravens offense that they're going up against. And I know Belichick's a defensive mastermind, and he's had success up against Lamar Jackson. If Lamar Jackson scores 3 touchdowns on Sunday, which he should be able to do, I don't know if the Patriots can match it. I really don't. Because it's, I know the Ravens are banged up on the defensive side of the ball, but the Ravens have good defense. Now, it's not one of their best defenses. It's not a great defense right now. But you just look at the players around Mac Jones, there's no one on that wide receiver depth chart that really you get scared by, or you think is going to take the ball deep and take the top off the defense. You just don't. So those three Alabama quarterbacks, like if you put Mac right now in Philadelphia, I wonder what the Eagles look like. If you put Mac in Miami, I wonder what the Dolphins look like. Now you could say it the other way. If Jalen Hurts got off to the start of his career in New England, maybe right away he has success. Who knows? Because of the coaching still of Belichick. I just don't get what the Patriots' approach is right now offensively. And that's coming from a Patriot fan. I don't get the whole Patricia play calling, Joe Judge getting back into the fold on the offensive side of the ball, and these weapons for the Pats, this is what I'll say. This year, I don't expect them to make the playoffs. I think 8-9 wins. That's what I think they are. But this offseason, you got to be aggressive. Not that the Eagles and Dolphins are guaranteed to have super-duper success, but their quarterback is in a spot to succeed. And this offseason, and it's only September we're talking about this way, Bill's got to find a way to go get a serious playmaker for Mac Jones because that rookie deal is so imperative. With these salaries at quarterbacks, it's so important to take advantage of the first 4 or 5 years of that rookie contract. How do you look at these Alabama quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, and Mac Jones, and how would you kind of rate them so far with what they've shown in their young football careers? It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, a very interesting allegation made.
Hey guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important. Give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What would you do with an extra 20 hours a week? How about 40? Get part-time or full-time help with a virtual assistant from The Room. Trusted by entrepreneurs, executives, even busy families. The Room's virtual assistants are trained, vetted through a rigorous data-driven process, and matched to fit your needs. Work smarter, delegate more, and get your time back. You have a lot more podcasts to listen to. Visit trytheroom.com. That's trytheroom.com.
In this Athletic article that talks about the demise of Herm Edwards' tenure at Arizona State, this one's really juicy. I'll tell you about it next, coming on back in 5 minutes. Join Scott Frost as being the two coaches that have been fired inside the Power Five from this past season or this season that's still ongoing for college football. The Herm Edwards one, not that the firing itself was bizarre in terms of him losing his job, but the way they went about it, I thought it was a bad look for Arizona State. Just because this, that's your former agent, the athletic director. You have the president on the field. You got to fire the guy. If that video is true, you got to fire the guy on the field. Like, whatever that conversation was between Herm, the president, and the AD, why wouldn't you just, from an optic standpoint, wait until you get inside the tunnel? Or since you're home, wait until he gets to the office. I'm talking about like his office or, you know, his locker inside of the facility. So I didn't get that. Now, I read this article today on The Athletic, which was great. And it details, well, yes, Herm Edwards had some big top 25 victories and there was times of optimism at Arizona State, why it ultimately failed. And he brought in Antonio Pierce early on. And basically the article detailed that Antonio Pierce was basically the head coach and Herm, who they said publicly was like the CEO. And it was Herm's vision, or there was a thought that Herm was eventually going to hand the program over to Antonio Pierce. The problem is, Herm hasn't coached in college football in a long, 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 long time or been around the college game. So yes, he has a charismatic personality. Yes, we've had him on the show a bunch of times. And full disclosure, I'm a fan of Herm Edwards. I like Herm Edwards. I loved it when he said, hello, you play to win the game. And then I also loved what he did on television. So I think there is a very good personality, and Herm Edwards happens to be a good guy. But when you are a college head coach, no matter how you spin that title, CEO, whatever it is, you got to know the recruiting rules. And there's a lot of times I roll my eyes at recruiting violations that I go, oh, that's so antiquated, that's so stupid, that's so dumb. But there's simple things that if your leader isn't following the rules, then everyone else is going to be sloppy as well, especially with how cutthroat college athletics is. So I get why the timing was right to move on from Herm Edwards. I get why they're moving on. And clearly there were people inside that university that did not want him to be there anymore. And when you're a guy that Herm that's pretty popular to the average person, that was once an NFL head coach, established name. If you're Herm, I know he loves those kids. I know he liked the job, but you don't want to get embarrassed. Now, I don't think Arizona State's a big talking point. I don't think people nationally would be piling on because Herm has a lot of friends in the media. He was in the media for like a decade. So I don't think it ever would have got to that point, but you don't want to risk in your last job or at the tail end of a coaching career, embarrassment and it being a clown show. So it's probably better for him that they did move on. But now, whenever, anytime a coach gets fired, there has to be a justification for the firing. And the justification just doesn't come always so simply. Now, you read the article, it's pretty clear why they thought the timing was right to move on and with the things that were going on and how sloppy it was. But it usually has to get ugly because people don't want to talk on the record for that justification to come on out. And that's what was in the article today. Now, you look at any coach, NFL, college, basketball, football, hockey, baseball. Whenever a coach or a manager gets fired, there's always some sort of piece, a hit piece, even sometimes when they're there, where all the writer's trying to do is just inform you what he's being told. But most of the times, the coach doesn't look good here because there's a reason why you're getting fired. Or people in university feel like they have to justify why the coach is getting fired. So I was reading this one line, and this is the one line that really stood out to me. Because there's one thing to acknowledge that Herm did not follow the rules of recruiting, and that Herm got sloppy, and you question really how all in was he with the way that a traditional college football head coach should be. But this one, if I am a prospective candidate for the Arizona State job, now each time you hire someone, it's different. But if this is true, this is kind of concerning for Arizona State. And this maybe could impact if someone takes a job. Now, I'm not a dummy. I get it. The salary for some of these coaches is ridiculous. Someone's always going to take the contract. And you don't know what's going to happen with the future of the Pac-12. But when I read in this Athletic article that an opposing coach recently told the Athletic that it wasn't hard to get intel on the season's team because some within the Arizona State Athletics wanted a coaching change. Think about how damaging that allegation is. We're going up against Arizona State. We know they want Herm Edwards out. So the allegation is that an opposing coach said it wasn't hard to get intel on this season's team because some with the Arizona State Athletic Department wanted a coaching change. Now, we don't know who that is. Remember the whole Wake Forest thing when it was a radio announcer with the whole leaks? This could be, I don't think it'd be the athletic director because it used to be his agent, but it could be someone involved in the athletic department talking about a suit. Could be a coach on the staff. I don't know who it is. And we could only speculate because it didn't say exactly whom that person was in the article because the opposing coach, which it's interesting, I wonder who the opposing coach is. But it doesn't always mean that it's a head coach. Now, he only had a limited games that were played this year for Arizona State so far. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a head coach. Could have been offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, special teams coach, whoever it was. And they only played three teams so far. NAU, which they beat by 40, they beat 40-3, beat by 37. Oklahoma State, where they lost 34-17. And then they paid Eastern Michigan a lot of money to go to Arizona State. And Eastern Michigan opened up a can of whoop-ass. And now this upcoming weekend for Arizona State. Yeah, it's actually probably better that Herm got fired now. The next 2 weeks, Utah and USC. That's going to be rough. That's going to be really tough. So he's out of a job. And you get all these candidates that could emerge. Like I was reading today, with the Nebraska job outside of Arizona State. Like right when these jobs get open up, you have the candidates, Urban Meyer last week in Lincoln, Nebraska for the big noon kickoff. That was a big topic of conversation. You hear Lance Leipold, Matt Campbell, Bill O'Brien. Like those are the three names that were really gaining steam today and gaining traction with Nebraska. For Arizona State, it just happened over the weekend. Now there's been names out there. I don't think we have a great understanding yet though of who's going to be up for that job with how early on in the process you are. If I'm, though, an established coach, though, looking for another opportunity, not like a young, up-and-coming coach, but maybe that does apply, too, you got to remember fit. Like, we talk about, to open up this hour, the fit for a young quarterback and being put in a position to succeed. Well, for Herm Edwards And yes, he lost control of that. But when people in the organization are trying to get back at him at the university and giving intel, allegedly, to opposing coaches, that would create some cause for concern. If I'm a young coach, if I'm an established coach, if someone doesn't like me in that athletic department, if something doesn't go the way that they want, or if it gets ugly 2-3 years from now, after I'm 2-3 years in, that's the length that it may have gone. Now, I don't know how you verify this. I was just reading the article. But when there's an allegation that an opposing coach recently told The Athletic that it wasn't hard to get intel on the season's team because someone in the Arizona State Athletics wanted a coaching change, that seems like they're giving you information, playbooks, scouting reports, whatever it is, to then go beat Arizona State. And that did seem dirty. That is dirty if that's the way that it did go down. So I get why they're getting rid of Herm Edwards. I get why the university wanted to make a move, and Herm's at fault. But when you read that article that after the third game, after he got fired, and who knows, is it a justification from the Herm camp? Did he hear something? I don't know. But when you hear that potentially an opposing coach said, yeah, it's easy to get intel on them because of the way that they were operating, yeah, that's not good. That's really bad, and that's really ugly, even if you wanted the guy out of the job. It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Hey, Marco, I'm just curious because I'm not a Yankees fan. Now, I don't hate the Yankees, but I just didn't grow up rooting for the Yankees. I grew up rooting for the Mets.
Mm-hmm.
Judge, who hit 60 last night and is trying to hit 61 to tie Maris and then eventually break the record for the most home runs in the history of the AL, do you view that as like a huge deal in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, it's big. Is it breaking the actual record? No, I'm not in that mindset of Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa didn't exist. I don't believe that. But at the same time, I mean, how many guys have hit 60? You're talking about, what, six?
Yeah,
it's
not
six
many.
Now, I think, in the history of the game. This is over 100 years. So, yeah, it's a big deal to get to that number. That is not a
and
number
that's... And this is what we think is clean.
Right. Look, I don't. That's the part of it that I don't want to get into.
Because I don't. If a guy hasn't failed the test, I don't like to assume... In this era now that he's taking. But I mean, don't think it's right to the athlete.
I get it, but I also don't want to get into the idea that, like, you know, I watched 98.
Yeah.
I thought it was special. It was fun. I remember I was...
Save baseball.
You know, I was in college and I was working. I actually called in sick. First time and only time in my life that I ever called in sick when I wasn't sick. And to sit there and watch McGwire hit 62. I had a feeling he would hit it that night.
Wow.
He had a shot. It was on national TV. I said, the hell with this. I'm not missing history tonight. I called out sick, and I stayed home, and I watched it.
So that's why Hickey's been calling out sick the last 2 days.
You know, and I'm glad. That's what I'm saying. So don't tell me that it wasn't real. It was real. I watched it. Is it the same feeling? I guess not, but it was still important at the time, and it means something.
So that's why I said it earlier. I'm not trying to diminish the importance of it, but it is a conflicting emotion for me because – for the era that I grew up in and how much that was fun to watch. Now, I, as a naive kid, I didn't know what was going on and what these players were taking. At my age, now, if you're a little bit older, everyone's jacked
Look,
and everything.
We
it's
knew
a little
we
bit
didn't
different.
Care.
Yeah,
that
because
was
it was
thing.
Entertaining.
We didn't care. Nobody cared. Like, the idea that now, like, oh, we had no idea. Yeah, you did. I knew McGwire was on steroids. We all did. We just didn't care. So now, all of a sudden, we got high and mighty after a while.
Exactly.
And now we want to pretend like it didn't really happen. Yeah, it did.
Because, and I think it's also... It may depend how old you are, because some older people may just be like, oh, nope, these guys cheated. I'm a baseball purist. Maris has the most home runs in a single season. And there's nothing I could say that's going to change that person's mind.
Right.
Now, Barry Bonds hit 73 in a season. No one's going to hit 73 home runs in a season.
You wouldn't think, no.
I would be surprised
we don't know
if
that.
It does.
I mean, we
sure.
obviously, look, ballparks are getting smaller, guys are bigger, stronger, blah, 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 blah.
And the game has become home run or strikeout.
Right. So, look, it's possible, but it's unlikely.
It's unlikely. But then people are going to tell me that's not the real record because that guy took steroids or something. So, it makes it tough as a fan to process this. Now, this is cool. This guy is bigger than life. He's a video game. And just hitting 60, like you said, is really damn impressive and is really neat. But it's weird to me because in one light, yeah, it's the most home runs in the history of the AL. But in the other, it's not the most home runs in a single season of all time. And that's why I think it's a big deal. But you know when there's a big deal and then a big, big, big deal? This is not a big, big, big deal.
Again, because it's not the actual record. The AL record part of it to me is not the important thing. To me, it's the number 60. Getting past 60.
Okay.
Again, six guys now, right? My math is correct, right?
I think you're right.
Hey, guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important. Give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ready to improve your bottom line? The Room can match you with a top financial analyst. Trusted by small businesses, startups, and entrepreneurs, The Room's virtual financial analysts are highly trained, vetted through a rigorous data-driven process, and matched to fit your needs. Drive business growth with a virtual financial analyst from The Room. It's like listening to all the financial podcasts rolled into one. Get started today at trytheroom.com. That's trytheroom.com.
Right, I'm going to talk about Bonds.
McGuire, Bonds, Judge, Babe Ruth.
And Maris, that's it.
Oh,
that's
Maris,
all we got.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Sosa did a few times, obviously. So,
yeah, right. McGuire did it more than once, too. Yeah. I get it. But like I said, and I don't want to go down this rabbit hole of clean and not clean and steroid and no steroid. But like, do I have to go down the idea of how many guys were on greenies?
Good point.
I mean, do we remember the lead and unleaded? This was a joke for how long? Yeah. The coffee in the clubhouse would be lead and unleaded. Lead was greenies. So that guys that, again, we don't want to go, trample on. Guys like Mickey Mantle who were out all night long and then the next day needed something to pick them up to be able to play the game, took greenies. We all know it. We all know those guys. I mean, through all those years, guys were on it. Now that's illegal. Do I want to go back and say Mickey Mantle wasn't a good player? Or that none of his records or his triple crown doesn't count because he was on greenies? And don't tell me he wasn't because we all know he was. So stop. That's what I'm saying. Like, I can't rewrite all this stuff. We know what happened. We know it wasn't legal at the time. You want to get on the high horse and, just shout at the clouds? You go ahead. I want to watch baseball and I want to enjoy it.
Yeah, and I say this all the time. Roger Clemens is my least favorite athlete of all time. It is a joke. And I know it's a whole different conversation.
Right,
but
right.
It all falls under the same kind of umbrella. It's a joke that the guy's not in the Hall of Fame. Stupid.
Again, and that's why we're ignoring
history. That's what we're doing.
And we're also putting lines that don't make sense. Because then again, we're going to go down the rabbit hole. David Ortiz in the Hall of Fame? Why?
Well, here's my favorite one. They made Piazza wait, but Pudge got in on the first try. And Pudge was once asked, did you ever take steroids? And he goes, only God knows the answer to that.
So what are we doing?
It's stupid.
What's what I'm saying? Like, well, I can't prove you did it, but I think you did it. So I'm going to punish you, but not really. David Ortiz, you failed the test, but you know what? You're really a nice guy, so hell with it.
We'll like, punch
what
you
we,
in.
None of it makes any sense.
Andy Pettit, you said sorry, so now no one even looks at you like you took anything.
Right, but you'll never go in the Hall of Fame, but you can be welcome back to Yankee Stadium. You can get your number retired. We'll always bow to your feet, but you don't get the other. So it's like, what are we doing? What are we doing?
So here's what I wanted to ask you as well, because we had a conversation about this. So I didn't know that the 60th home run ball, it's a wide range on the value. But Darren Rovell said that it would be worth anywhere from $50,000 to $500,000. The ball last night. Now, it was, as you know, one of, I think, like four college kids, him and his friends went to the game. Right. He got the baseball, and afterwards he said Judge could just take it, and the Yankees gave him like a signed bat and I think a signed baseball.
Yeah.
They took a picture. I feel weird ripping on the kid today because if I was in that moment, I don't think I would even realize that someone that does this for a living – the value of the 60th home run ball, to me, like if it was 61, 62, I would then start to think about the price tag. If you were at that game last night, I can't envision Marco Belletti running in the bleachers and bulldozing through people to go get the baseball.
It would have to hit my hands.
Yes.
Yeah, it would have to hit me in the face.
I can't see you doing that. And if you are, probably the person next to you is saying, I'm getting out of the way because here comes Marco.
Well, let's not make it sound like I'm a Kool-Aid man.
But what would you ask for in that moment? For the 60th home run ball, like 61, 62, I then start to attach a price tag to it because it's tying Maris and then breaking Maris.
I'll be fair. You're asking me at 20 years old when I was this kid's age?
Yeah.
I would have got exactly what he got, nothing. That's basically what I would have got. At 20,
I said season tickets.
Not the brightest. I'm not going to deny that. And it would have been the idea that I would have thought the same thing.
Man, a lot's changed, I'll tell you that.
Right. It would have been the idea, look, it's your ball, it's your moment. I'm just some guy that happened to catch it. You deserve this. It's your go ahead. And I really do want to say that now. However, I have bills to pay and children to feed. So that's a different story. So if that actually did hit my hands, I would probably be the guy that like, look, I want to give this back to you. I really do. I need to go home and think about this one.
Talk to my wife.
And try to figure out something that, look, is not unfair to you, but I need to make sure I'm doing right by my family and not basically handing you a lottery ticket for no reason. Because that's the difficult part. Like, I don't want the ball. I really don't. Like, I get it. Like, you would want it. But, like, I don't want it. It's not going to be on my mantle in my crap shack. It doesn't really matter. It matters in the fact that if that actual that baseball can put my kids through college, I'm not doing my job as a dad to make sure that I get the value for it.
That's fair.
That's the only thing. And that would basically be my thing to judge. If we were standing there talking like, look, I don't
You're about to get a crap load of money.
Yeah, like I get it from your standpoint. I want you to have this thing. I truly do. But unless you want to just give me the money that's for it, I'm willing to take less in that regard, a little bit less, you know, kind of hometown discount, like I hope you take with the Yankees and being a Yankee fan. Like, if we want to do that, then cool. If not, I got to sell this thing because I got to make sure my kids are taken care of because I don't have the capability to make $100,000 in a night or in a year. Like, I can't do that.
For sure.
So I need to make sure that I'm taking care of my family. So I would go home and say, like, look, guys, I need to sleep on this. And it's not the season tickets. It's not whatever. I don't want any of that.
You want the money.
Look, sign the baseball. That would be cool. Maybe give it to my son or something. Sign a bat and put it in the living room. That would be cool. And that's easy for you to do.
Yeah.
I want money. I'm not going to lie. I want money.
But for the 60th home run ball, last night, I know it's a big range, $50,000 to $500,000 for that baseball?
I don't know why people buy the stuff that they buy. But the only thing it's I can say is, if you got a lot of money.
Yeah, I guess you spend.
I mean, because really doesn't matter.
What are you saving it for?
But I mean, it's the idea that, like, look, if you gave me, like, an infinite amount of money and you gave me the ability to buy, like, stupid toys that were really expensive, but the money doesn't matter to me, I'd probably spend stupid money, too.
Yeah, that's
true. What the hell is the difference? Like, does it really affect you? And then if it really does, where you look at it and go, you know what? I could use another $150,000. Well, you know what? I'll just sell this thing that I got in here that I put in the living room for the last 5 years.
Yeah, like Steve Cohen dropping $150 million on an art sculpture.
Right. And then you just sell something else. So it doesn't really matter. So I get it.
You know what the moral of the story is? We got to start hanging out with rich people that just spend stupid money so we could be with them and just see the dumb purchases that they make.
I'm all for it, but I don't really know any really rich people. Yeah. You know anybody? Because
here and there, a few.
I'm not a bad guy. I mean, we can sit and talk.
I think you should be the locker room lawyer. I want to get Marco at Yankee Stadium for the next few nights, and then whoever gets 61 and 62, if it's a kid, Marco just walks over like the voice of reason. Kid, you're making a mistake. You got to go get $80,000. You got to go get $150,000.
That's what I'm saying. But like at 20, I was too stupid. Like, I'm going to take over the world anyway. It doesn't really matter. I don't need the $100,000 today because I'll make it at some point. No, I'm not. Like, I'm not. I thought I was. I'm not. It's not going to happen.
We'll do the closing bell next. Let's end the show out in style with the closing bell.
Another day is in the books, and we're taking stock of the sports world. It's time to find out who's up and who's down. Let's end the day right and hit the closing bell. Only on the Zach Gelb Show.
So yesterday we spent a lot talking about Jalen Hurts and how unbelievable he's been for the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll stay with the Eagles today, but we'll flip it to the other side of the ball. How about big play Slay? Darius Slay, named the NFC Defensive Player of the Week, was dominant up against the Minnesota Vikings. Did a great job against one Justin Jefferson, who we all know is one of, if not the best wide receivers in football. And I was reading today from Thomas Peterson, which is a Twitter account that's been featured by Bleacher Report and NFL Network. Darius Slay up against Justin Jefferson. 6 targets, no catches allowed, 3 pass breakups, and 2 interceptions. So Darius Slay with a monster, monster, monster night for the Philadelphia Eagles up against the Vikings. Give him a stock up. Also then got to give an additional shout to Tua Tagovailoa. To be able to throw 6 passing touchdowns in a game is really damn impressive. 4 of them did come in the fourth quarter, as you know, and he is the AFC Offensive Player of the Week. For week 2, give Tua Tagovailoa a stock up. Okay, this one I didn't think was going to happen. Not that I ever thought he was a bad wide receiver, but to me, he's the number two wide receiver on a team. Like, I don't look at him as a number one, but he got paid somewhat like a number one wide receiver at $18.5 million a year. Remember that Christian Kirk signing with the Jacksonville Jaguars? So they lose week one to the Commanders, then they beat the Colts. He has 12 receptions through two games, 195 yards, and two touchdowns. 6 for 117, no scores up against the Commanders, and last week found the end zone twice and had 78 yards. Now, if I'm spending money, is that the guy that I'm spending all the money on? Probably not. But you have to put your young quarterback in a good spot, and it's better than doing nothing since he's kind of like an in-betweener. That's the way that I would call him. He's not a number one. He is a good number two. There's times you may look at him as like a 1.5. But he's not a number one wide receiver, and that's what he's basically being asked to do in Jacksonville. But so far, hey, it's working out. So give Christian Kirk a stock up.
Whoa!
All righty. Let's get to a little Bill Belichick. So these are my favorite interactions throughout the year. Bill Belichick against the media. And I kind of experienced this when I went to the joint practice this summer. I asked about Baker Mayfield because if you ask Coach Belichick about a long snapper or an opposing player, you usually get an answer. Now, when I asked Belichick about Baker Mayfield, I basically got 45 seconds just mumbling, and you could tell he didn't want to answer the question. Well, today, a reporter with the Patriots playing the Baltimore Ravens this weekend in Foxborough at One Patriot Place Gillette Stadium asked Bill Belichick if the pre-draft concerns from the media, from scouts about Lamar Jackson have been proven to be false. This is how Bill Belichick had to respond.
Without a doubt, it's the type of player that's a MVP type of candidate. So I think he's more than answered him. But we'll see what his contract is. That'll answer him.
That's awesome by Belichick. Now, they did meet before the draft. Belichick supposedly had interest in Lamar Jackson, ended up not going on out there and getting Lamar Jackson at the time. But Belichick basically gave the blessing that he has, that Lamar is a great player. He does some unbelievable things. And yeah, that contract's going to be a lot of money.
It's going to be a bunch of money. And, he's obviously deserving of it. Heck of a player, great player. And, it's going to do great things for years to come. We'll see if Baltimore pays him.
And finally, let's hear one more time. Giancarlo Stanton walk-off grand salami last night, called in Spanish by Ricky Ricardo.
Ahí va el batazo, profundo por el izquierdo. Olvídala, esa se va, se va, se fue, se fue, se fue. Un salami para acabar el partido. Giancarlo Stanton. Oh, un lineazo. Y la botó. Un grand slam walk-off.
Give a stock up. Ricky Ricardo, what an unbelievable call that was.
Hey guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important. Give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for cloud, data, or web help? There's no tech shortage in the room. The Room is a talent community offering highly skilled, ready-to-work talent when you need it. The Room's tech talent is trained to Silicon Valley standards, vetted through a rigorous data-driven process, and individually matched to fit your needs. Find top-tier tech talent fast, just like the kind of people who develop this cool streaming app you're on right now. Visit trytheroom.com/tech.